This week in KMA Land, Sydney and Hamburg officials air concerns over law enforcement costs. More EMS discussions in Montgomery County. Shenandoah Council sets Fremont Berry Channel aquifer loan. Council members table housing project extension. Page County's budget numbers are set. And a Creston teacher dispute is settled. I'm Mike Peterson. Officials in two KMA Land communities are expressing concerns about the cost of law enforcement coverage from Fremont County. Representatives of Sydney and Hamburg addressed the Fremont County Board of Supervisors Wednesday morning, asking for the county's help in addressing what they feel is a disparity in the amount the Fremont County Sheriff's Office charges for coverage. Currently, Sydney and Fremont County remain at an impasse on a new 28E agreement for law enforcement. The existing five-year agreement expires June 30th. While saying he has no problems with the quality of coverage provided by the Sheriff's Office, Sydney Mayor Justin Shirley says there is a delicate balance between public safety and financial responsibility.
I have a deep appreciation of law enforcement and understand the importance of public safety and the sacrifices that people in their profession make. I want to preface this by saying it's not meant to be an attack on the Fremont County Sheriff's Department because I'm thankful for what they do, but I do want to highlight the budget disparities and the problems that it's causing my city and my constituents.
Currently, Shirley says Sydney is paying $109 per capita each year, while Hamburg is paying $130 per capita. Under a one-year extension, those costs would increase to $112 per capita for Sydney and $134 per capita for Hamburg. Hamburg City Councilman Kent Benefield proposes each of the county's communities pay the same per capita for law enforcement coverage. Like Sydney, Benefield says his community seeks a more equitable solution to law enforcement funding.
We don't want to pick up our ball and go home and cause the county to go down, you know, I guess Hamburg's one deputy in the dollar amount thing, because it's not good for the rest of the county either. But we would like to find a way maybe the rest of the county could help share in the load that we're having to get out of our budget.
Though Sydney and Hamburg each receive 4 hours of coverage from the Sheriff's Office per day, 365 days a year, Fremont County Sheriff Kevin Astrup says his department exceeds those hours in those communities because of the number of investigations and incidents. Astrup also says his department needs a deputy in both communities in order to provide adequate coverage.
I don't mind them getting their own officer at all. I'm perfectly fine with that, or I'm perfectly fine with the county to say, hey, we will absorb some of the cost, but I can't do without a person and still give them the service, if that makes sense to you guys.
After considerable discussion, Astrup proposed the formation of a committee with representatives of each community to examine law enforcement coverage and costs. No action was taken by the board. Discussion continues on emergency medical services in Montgomery County. County Emergency Management Coordinator Brian Hammond reviewed Iowa code regulations regarding EMS at Tuesday's Montgomery County Board of Supervisors meeting. Hammond outlined code information covering the county's declaration of EMS as essential services, followed by a referendum approved by voters. Another code section spells out the funding mechanisms, which includes the passage of a levy of up to 75 cents per $1,000 valuation to cover EMS services. A 60% supermajority is needed for the levy referendum to pass. Hammond says research indicates EMS differs between municipalities.
I think we can all agree our situation's unique. Every county is unique, whether it's a hospital-based EMS system or a contracted service, or the county creating a completely new service. I mean, the information that we've got is across the board. There's no one county that's the same, it seems like.
Hammond believes the county won't be ready for an EMS referendum vote until next year.
Obviously, we have hurdles. There's the tax issue with the Red Oak residents. There's also the issue with our EMS districts, all but one going to adjoining counties. So the case could be fed for those voting to approve or deny. Is it fair for us in the county to approve this when those in outlying counties are not going to pay for the tax, essentially?
Hammond says supporters must also identify the county's emergency services needs. He pinpointed two needs, money and people.
Volunteerism is down. Everyone knows that, no matter what it is. We have a small applicant pool, you know, trying to find people in the small communities that are available that want to help out is a challenge. Training is a challenge. Continuing education is a challenge. So I think sitting down with these groups and really discussing what our needs are and potentially what the future looks like. I hate to see a Villisca or a Stanton lose their ambulance in the next 5 to 10 years, but, what's the reality? Is that a possibility?
At last week's meeting, Red Oak City Administrator Lisa Cotter urged the supervisors to facilitate discussions regarding an EMS essential services referendum. However, Cotter at Tuesday's meeting urged the board to go slow on the process.
It really needs to be done well and done well the first time. So I had kind of said that last time that hopefully you understand that I wouldn't see anything going before any sort of vote until 2027 to make sure that you give all the communities along with county representation the time to go through that.
Supervisors Chair Charlotte Schmidt called for the formation of a county committee to oversee the referendum's preparations. Schmidt asked Henderson to seek representatives from each community and various entities, including Montgomery County Memorial Hospital, to serve on the committee. More discussion is expected at future supervisors' meetings. Shenandoah cleared another hurdle this week in planning for the Fremont Berry Channel Aquifer Project. By unanimous vote Tuesday night, the Shenandoah City Council approved taking additional action for a loan agreement and the issuance of water revenue capital loan notes not to exceed $8.8 million for the Fremont Berry Channel Aquifer. Council members took action following a public hearing in which City Water Superintendent Tim Martin answered questions on why the project was needed. Plans call for tapping into an aquifer located about 7 miles west of the community and drilling at least 2 wells into the aquifer near 190th Street and 355th Avenue. Martin says the new wells will be deeper than the city's current wells. Local resident Pat Lammers asked a number of questions, including why the city was still having water issues.
Nobody else in the area is having a problem with drought and no water. No, I would like to know why are we, Shenandoah, having such a terrible time when there's no drought anywhere else, and we've got 11 wells. And you say they can't keep up with 5,000 households?
Martin replied that Shenandoah's water supply situation is different from that of surrounding communities.
Like Clarinda gets their water out of the river. Red Oak has Dakota Aquifer. We don't have Dakota down there. You've got Sydney goes out of the Fremont Channel. So you can't compare apples to oranges around towns next to us.
Despite recent rainfall, he adds the city is still under water conservation measures in order to keep the city's water pumps operating. Lammers also asked whether the city is planning to increase water rates to cover the aquifer project's loan. City Administrator A.J. Lyman says no additional rate hikes are planned other than those previously approved.
At this time, we're not projecting any additional increases than those that are planned. We've been doing the 1.5% increases annually. And as of looking at it with our financial advisor and the analysis that he does, he thinks if we stayed with those 1.5% increases, in theory, it should cover. As of right now.
Council members also unanimously approved the bank proposal connected to the aquifer's loan notes of Huntington Bank of Columbus, Ohio, with an interest rate of 4.05%, with potential reimbursable legal fees of $3,000. Lyman says Huntington Bank's proposed interest rate was the lowest of 4 banks bidding on the project, including Norwest Bank, in conjunction with Heritage Bank and Bank Iowa. In other business Tuesday night, the council postponed a proposed extension for a housing project on 2 vacant lots. By unanimous vote Tuesday evening, the Shenandoah City Council tabled a decision on properties at 1115 and 1117 West Lowell Avenue for 6 months. Back in November 2024, the council sold the properties to Joe Morrow, owner of Catnap Properties, for $500 each. Morrow was then given a 3-year time frame for housing development at that location. Morrow told the council Tuesday night that health issues prevented him from working on those lots.
Now that I'm back in the land of the living, the real estate market is a little shaky, and with the inflation, prices are up for building anything. And we're having to rework getting this moving forward.
Morrow asked the council for a 3-year extension of the property, saying he would use 3D printing to assist in development.
3D printing stuff is rather new, but it's very economical. So that's where I'm looking at right now. If we get a 3-year extension on that, that'd be great. If not, I don't know if we'll be able to get anything finished before December 22nd. when the original 3 years runs out.
Morrow says he would be willing to give the lots back to the city if his project fails to develop. After further discussion, the council tabled a decision for 6 months and asked Morrow to provide a soft update in 90 days. Page County joins the rank of KMA Land counties setting budget numbers for next fiscal year. At its regular meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors held a public hearing, approved a series of budget resolutions, and adopted the budget for fiscal year 2027, which begins July 1st. Under the approved budget, the countywide property tax rate is set at roughly $7.34 per $1,000 valuation, while the rural rate is set at roughly $10.23 per thousand. County Auditor Kristen Wagoner also provided a budget presentation prior to the public hearing. Wagoner says department heads worked hard to try to meet the goal set by supervisors early in the budget process to reduce expenses by around 3%.
They really tried to reduce, and most people reduced by 3 to 5%. They cut. We did try to find ways to save money. I mean, we did combine some things in the courthouse. Some of the things that went up would be insurance, and that is just things that we cannot change. The departments did a very good job. It's very hard with the jail because we just don't know what the costs are going to be yet. I mean, they have done a very good job of trying to compare to other jails.
County resident Cindy Van Fossen was the lone member of the public to speak at the hearing and called on the county to continue searching for efficiencies throughout the year in how its departments operate. Wagner says it can be challenging to continually make significant cost reductions when two departments, secondary roads and public safety, make up nearly 55% of the county's budget.
You know, one of the biggest expenses we have, two of them, roads and public safety. So how do we cut that? Because everybody wants their road better. Everybody wants it graveled. Everybody wants it paved. You know, and we've, so it's definitely been a discussion that they have all been trying to figure out how to cut expenses.
Some of the discussion also focused on the supervisors' views on potential property tax reform coming from the State House this session. While the consensus has not been reached between the Iowa House and Senate, proposals from both chambers and Governor Kim Reynolds would look to set hard or soft caps on city and county revenue growth. Supervisor Judy Clark says this also comes as counties continue to provide unfunded mandates from the state, citing the lack of revenue from tickets issued by county law enforcement as one example. After months of litigation, a settlement was reached this week in a First Amendment lawsuit between the Creston School District and a high school English teacher. Ethan Hewitt has the story.
Following a closed session at its regular meeting Monday evening, the Creston School Board approved the settlement, which, among other things, requires the district's insurer to pay Melissa Crook $145,000 on the district's behalf. Under the settlement, the district must compensate Crook for all salary and benefits due under her 2025-26 teaching contract and the 2025-26 extracurricular contract through the effective date of her resignation, take any mention of Crooks's comments, the district's investigation, the recommendation to terminate, or any related disciplinary actions out of her employment record, and issue a pre-written public statement supporting differing opinions in the district. Additionally, under the agreement, Crook agreed to resign from the district effective at the end of the current school year and not to reapply the district in the future. At its regular meeting on April 15th, Nottoway Valley School Board approved the hiring of Crook as a high school language arts teacher. As part of the settlement, both parties will dismiss their claims and appeals, with the agreement not serving as an admission of liability or wrongdoing from either party. In October 2025, Crook had filed the lawsuit in the Federal Southern District of Iowa against the district, claiming her First Amendment rights had been violated when she was placed on administrative leave and later faced termination of her employment in response to a social media comment she made regarding the killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk in September last year. In January, a federal judge had ruled partially in favor of Crook and had ruled the district was prohibited from taking any adverse employment actions against Crook for her Facebook comment. In the ruling, Judge Rebecca Ebinger said the defendants lacked evidence to show the disruption was large enough to justify censoring Crook. The district had filed an appeal to the ruling in early February. Ethan Hewitt reporting.
As the June Iowa primary campaign heats up, Iowa Democratic gubernatorial candidate Rob Sand made his way through KMA land this week. Local school officials and public education advocates met with Sand for an education roundtable at Tisch's Kitchen in Council Bluffs. covering a wide range of topics ranging from funding for public education to recent reforms made to area education agencies. Much of the discussion also surrounded state-funded educational savings accounts. Established by the Iowa legislature in 2023, ESAs provide families a dollar amount similar to state per-pupil aid to send their students to private schools. Understanding the idea of providing more choices or competition through processes like open enrollment, Sands says rural areas in particular wouldn't benefit as much from ESAs because they have fewer private schools nearby.
Practically speaking, you've got an entire county where there's only two districts. That's not very functional. Because how are you going to drive your kids, you know, all the way across the county and back again every day? In more urban places, it kind of makes sense. But then again, to your point, it's only competition if it's the same set of rules. And to me, we're not there right now.
Currently serving as the state auditor, Sands says Iowa is spending roughly $350 million on ESAs, which he argues have little oversight. In addition to imposing income limitations on ESAs, Sands says the state should also better regulate how private schools use state dollars and create a more level playing field.
If you take public money, you take the public. No picking and choosing what student can come in the front door. We should make it so that there's rules if you're using the ESA program as a private school for how you spend the money. You shouldn't be able to buy fancy leather furniture. You shouldn't be able to spend it on a vacation. You know, the same things that get you in trouble for public school for how you spend money should get you in trouble for a private school that's spending public money too.
In addition to calling for higher state supplemental aid amounts, multiple roundtable members also pointed to a teacher shortage in the state. Former Council Bluffs School Board member Chris LaFerla says a significant teacher shortage would be detrimental not only to the public education, but also to the state's economy.
It goes beyond salaries. Teachers are not paid what they should be paid. They're still doing the work despite that. It is constant critiques and attacks and criticisms by legislators, by Department of Ed officials, by parents and community members that don't have children in school. It is a teacher respect issue, and it has gone way too far.
Sand is the lone Democrat on the ballot for the governor's race in the June primary. Three of the five candidates running for the Republican nomination in the Iowa governor's race say the state's rising cancer rate must be addressed. In the first televised debate of the race, hosted by Iowa PBS, candidates Adam Steen, Brand Sherman, and Eddie Andrews were asked what they would do to combat Iowa's second-in-the-nation cancer incident rate. Steen, the former director of the Department of Administrative Services, says politicians must stop talking about cancer to score political points and start taking action.
I will create an enterprise within the Department of Administrative Services that is purely focused on solving the cancer issue. We're going to focus on prevention, and we're going to focus on treatment. And we're going to put a project together. We're going to bring smart people to the table, people that know what they're talking about, people that don't care about politics, people that are nonpartisan, that just want to solve the issues, prevent it, and treat it.
Andrews currently serves as a state representative in the Iowa House. He says initial investments made by the legislature in research are a good first step. He also supports expanded testing for radon, a radioactive gas linked to lung cancer.
We are making radon kits available. I'm proposing early, if not free, but certainly reduced cancer screening for all Iowans. It won't stop the cancer, but obviously early detection will help mitigate that.
Sherman, a pastor and former state representative, says there must be more independent research into the issue due to mistrust of current studies. He also emphasized that the food Iowans eat could play a role.
I'd like for us to start growing the food that we eat right here in Iowa. You know, we import about 90% of the food, and a lot of it comes from far away into the food that we eat in Iowa. If we had good natural food, everybody knows that a good diet is important when it comes to stopping cancer. And whether it stops, whether you ever have a cancer risk or not, eating good food is good for you. So that's something we can start working on right away.
Two other candidates for the GOP nomination, Congressman Randy Feenstra and Zach Lawn, both declined to participate in the event. Feenstra's campaign cited the congressman's work in Washington, D.C. in the Farm Bill, while Lawn said he would not participate without Feenstra present. Two more Shenandoah High School graduates joined the ranks of outstanding alumni last Saturday night. Roger Scarborough of the Shenandoah High Class of 1970 and Chuck Offenberger, a 1965 SHS grad, were honored as Alumni of the Year at the Shenandoah Iowa Education Foundation's 5th Annual Excellence in Education Banquet at the Elm Street Grill. Scarborough is founder and executive chairman of Scarborough Global, a Kansas City-based logistics and global trade services company. Scarborough and wife Jeannie also founded Northland Christian School in the Kansas City area. He's also traveled to more than 70 countries and 6 continents. Scarborough paid tribute to heroes in the room, namely his former SHS instructors and the Shenandoah community.
Our motto at Northland Christian is, whoever wants the next generation the most will get them. And I wouldn't have lived in Shenandoah, I would have never made it through school if I hadn't had the help of this community and the way that they raised people and the way that they did.
In this era of division, Scarborough says he hopes Shenandoah never loses its kindness.
But Shenandoah still has to care about its people. We still have to educate our children. We still have to show that kindness and that love and that willingness to help raise everybody that lives in this town. I come back for ShanFest, and I'm always amazed at the loyalty and the things that show up around here. And I just don't want Shenandoah to ever lose that kindness.
Known as the Des Moines Register's famed Iowa Boy columnist for more than a quarter century, Offenberger began his journalism career at the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel at age 13. Like Scarborough, Offenberger credited his teachers, Evening Sentinel staffers, and other adults with his success.
But I think back to that, and I was so encouraged by so many teachers, coaches, administrators, Monsignor Morosco at St. Mary's, other adults, my adult colleagues working with me at the Evening Sentinel, teaching me how to do all this, taking me out on news and sports stories, introducing me to people. That I wonder what would have happened to me if I hadn't had that kind of support at that time in my life.
Offenberger was among the founders of CEEF 10 years ago and served on the organization's board for 6. Offenberger says his involvement with the foundation helped him reconnect with the school district.
I realized I had drifted off enough and wasn't around here enough that I really knew who was involved in the schools today. And the coolest thing was getting to meet the administrators, the teachers, the staff, and even some of the students at Shenandoah today and the Shenandoah schools today. And that just filled me up to be able to see that. And I just kept looking at those students and thinking, just like they were here tonight, I just thinking, oh my God, I hope you know what you're getting here, because you're gonna be in appreciation of this the rest of your life. Because I am.
Also honored were 3 Shenandoah School District staff members with 25 years or more of education experience: high school language arts instructor Martha Mason, K-8 custodian Jeff McCoy, and Ignite principal and district transportation director Denise Green. 4 other district staffers received the CEEF Spirit Awards for 2026. K-8 custodian Brian Blank, elementary associate Amber Fichter, middle school family consumer science instructor Noah Bielby, and SHS art instructor Crystal Whitmer. After achieving major goals and projects, the Shenandoah Iowa Education Foundation set its sights on new endeavors in its second decade. CEEF officials celebrated 10 years of service to the Shenandoah School District at that Excellence in Education banquet last Saturday evening. Operating as a nonprofit, the founder's goal is to serve the district's charitable and educational purposes and to support its efforts to expand opportunities for all students. Foundation President Julie O'Hara announced the organization recently achieved a major goal set a decade ago upon its establishment.
10 years ago, we started off with some pretty lofty dreams and ideas, and some were great and have been really successful, and some have gone away because, you know, not everything can stick. But one of our goals was to build an endowment of $1 million. $1 million. And I'm proud and very pleased to announce to you tonight that we've met that goal.
With the completion of one major project, new seating at Gladys Worsick Jones Auditorium, Foundation officials eye a second initiative, new signage and directional signs along the district's campus. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News.